present Patricia Gallimore, Stephen Murray, and Noel Johnson in Somewhere Lies Land by Philip Barker, the story of an adventurous voyage under sail to Australia in the year 1854. Somewhere Lies Land.
Miss Caroline, wake up.
Hmm? What is it?
Oh, Mrs. Tully, what's the matter? Footsteps at the door. There's someone outside the cabin door.
Mrs. Tully, you should be in your bunk. You're not strong enough.
No, I heard them playing.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to fall asleep. Here, let me take your arm.
Lying there. I was just lying there. The noise, and we must be ready. They told us not to undress. They warned us. The danger. The breakers, they said.
We are clear of the breakers now, Mrs. Tully. Heaven be praised. Please, let me help you to your...
Then I heard them outside the door, trying it, muttering and laughing. I could hear them breathing.
Pray calm yourself, ma'am. No one intends to harm us.
How can you be so blind? Those drunken seamen, like animals, sodden with drink, all of them. If it had not been for Mr. Pelham...
But that was many weeks ago, ma'am. The day we crossed the equator. You remember? There is no one there now.
What are you doing?
I will prove it to you.
For pity's sake, girl, do not open the door.
Ease your fears.
In heaven's name, leave it locked. Locked, I beg you.
See? There's no one here.
No, what?
The alleyway's deserted.
Oh, I could not be mistaken. They would hear you. They are in hiding.
You are distressed, overwrought. Little wonder after all we've experienced.
But I heard. I swear.
Perhaps the wind in the rigging. The sea. Perhaps you slept and did not realize.
Sleep. I'll not sleep. Not again. Except in death.
Mrs. Tully.
And death does flirt with us so. In truth, she would be welcome enough.
Do not talk so, ma'am. You've been so brave throughout these hazardous months.
It is a judgment. All this drunkenness, this envy and disharmony, this blaspheming. I tell you, God will not be mocked.
Come, ma'am, lie down. You're sick and weak from hunger. There. If you lie quietly, sleep will come.
The seas have tried so many times to take us. Mrs. Murphy knew. No one fit to command. It's a judgment. They have brought us to this.
Calm yourself. Rest quietly.
In Australia, it's many weeks at sea, you know. A long voyage, and sometimes as much as 3 months, my husband writes. But he will be waiting at Port Adelaide to greet us. My dear husband, waiting. Waiting. All those weeks ago. Waiting.
Peace. Try not to dwell on such things. You will see your husband. He will still be there to greet you.
Do you think so? That God in his infinite mercy... Do you truly think so?
I do. Now try and rest. I shall keep watch until daylight. Forget your fears.
You are a dear child. And so very considerate for one so young.
I am 25, and as for being considerate...
And I nearly twice your age. I have been a great tribulation to you.
On the contrary, ma'am. It has been of immense comfort to me sharing your cabin.
Not always, I suspect. Fear often clouds one's judgment. I pray you to forgive me.
Hush, ma'am. Try and sleep. See, I shall turn the lamp a little lower so that it does not distract you. Then consider my journal. That will keep me awake and watchful.
You will harm your eyes in too dim a light.
This is more than adequate. And it will conserve the oil. There is little enough.
Even so, one must take care in such matters. You have kept your journal diligently.
It has been a means of passing the hours recording our happenings and my thoughts. Have you kept any such record for your husband's interest? Mrs. Tully? Thank God. Poor soul. The oblivion of sleep. Would that I... But you, Jenna, are too tangible and sure. August 18th, 1854. Day 153. Over 5 months at sea now without once touching land. 5 months? So long? Over 20 long weeks since... March the 19th, 1854. From this cabin, as I write, I can hear the sea. Around me is the creaking ship, rising and falling at anchor. I imagine I hear the freshening breeze in the high rigging, men running in answer to deck commands. And yet, even so, I find it difficult to believe that I am actually here, that tomorrow we leave England for the far-off new continent of Australia, crossing great oceans and witnessing those things which until now have been to me only romantic words on a page. The master of this fair sailing vessel is a Captain William Crispin, a large, bluff, merry man, or so he would seem, who was quick to sense our wariness when we gathered at table for the first time in the saloon.
Just leave it to the sea. I promise you the sea has an uncanny way of bringing those who traverse her closely together in comradeship.
Yes.
Is that not so, mister?
Aye, sir. That is so.
Mr. Booth, ladies and gentlemen, the first officer.
How do you do, sir?
Mr. Mate to all, except perhaps the crew. They at times find a less delicate name for him, but only when they think he's not within hearing.
I see.
Jackson?
Aye, sir.
The glasses are empty.
Aye, sir.
Well, jump to it, man. Now, I wonder if you might be persuaded into humouring me a little.
In what manner, sir?
It's only a trifle, to be sure, on your suggestion, but as we're to spend so much time closely associated, how would it be if we were each to take turn around the table introducing ourselves?
No objection.
Would we then not all be better acquainted from the outset?
Yes.
Suppose you were to start us off, sir.
Wade. Jocelyn Wade. I returned to Australia after business in England.
Returning? Then this passage will hold no qualms for you, at any rate, Mr.
I shipped originally to Manila and from there to Australia. I returned via America, so that I am not familiar with the crossing this way.
But a seasoned traveler, nevertheless.
Ah.
Excellent. Though I guarantee you'll have sailed on no fairer vessel than the Prince Regent. Hey, Mr. Booth.
I doubt it, Captain.
She certainly is an elegant ship.
In my experienced opinion, sir, the fairest three-masted bark ever to carry sail. Indeed, almost as fair in her own way as the ladies we are privileged to have in our company.
You're
exceedingly welcome aboard, ladies.
You'll
bring luster and charm to what would otherwise be a tedious and colorless voyage.
Here.
Thank you.
We met earlier, ma'am. Miss Collins.
Yes, when I first came on board.
Before the activities of getting underway claimed my attention, I recall our discourse with pleasure. You're ultimately bound somewhere north of Adelaide, I remember.
I'm not sure precisely where I'm to be met. My late father's brother owns land there. A sheep station, I believe.
I read that only 4 years ago, in 1850, there were more than 16 million sheep in Australia. 16 times more sheep than people. If for that reason alone, and not for others I might catalogue, your arrival will be a most welcome advent.
Thank you. I certainly hope so.
I'm most certain of it. And you say, is your interest in sheep?
No, sir. Copper.
Then you're probably for the Kapunda mine.
I go to manage it. You know it.
I know of it. I once carried Mr. Francis Dutton as passenger. He discovered it, I believe.
He and Captain Baggett. I am Thomas Murphy. This is my wife, Mrs. Alice Murphy.
How'd you do?
We are from the West Country.
Oh, yes, Mr. and Mrs. Murphy, I recall now. Before we left Gravesend, before my wife left the ship, did she not infuse to me of a third Murphy? A tiny Murphy, perhaps?
Our baby daughter, Victoria. She's not quite a year old.
Not yet a year. Mm-hmm. Our youngest passenger ever, I do believe. It's a venturesome voyage for one so tender in years. I'm sure had she been sailing with us, Mrs. Crispin would have plagued you to assist with the child.
Oh, she's a good, contented baby. And already both Miss Collins and Mrs. Tully have been most kind with their offers of help.
I should be happy to be of service.
So, Mrs. Murphy, you have the ladies' hearts and hands to your bidding.
I'm most grateful.
But Mrs. Tully is ungracious that we should reach you last in this manner. Oh. This is your first sea passage?
I have never even been on a ship. Even now... But it is my husband's wish that I should join him in the new colony of Victoria.
Victoria? Where the gold lies for the taking, or so it seems.
Oh, Mr. Tully is on government business in Melbourne.
And we can imagine with what pleasure he anticipates your arrival there, ma'am.
Captain, my husband writes that the voyage could take possibly as long as 12 weeks. Are you able to tell us just how long we shall be?
That depends entirely upon the elements, ma'am. Excepting, of course, for your officers and crew, on which score you need have no doubt.
Oh, I'm sure.
We leave this anchorage off New Reach tomorrow, and if it is our fortune to be favored by fair winds, well, then the Clipper Lightning recently made landfall in Melbourne from Liverpool in 76 days. Oh. Why not the Prince Regent?
The Lightning?
But that, I understand, was a light weather trip most of the way. Is that right, mister?
Aye, sir. I do hear she never even lowered her topgallants, not once.
You'll soon become accustomed to our sailor's terms.
But the Lightning, isn't that an American ship, a much bigger vessel? Surely she carries a vast spread of canvas, around 13,000 yards of sail.
You appear to know your ships, Mr. Wade. But to be American and bigger is not necessarily to be the best, despite what they say.
Now, I meant only that with our, 500-600 tons against the Lightning's 1,400.
It's in the way she's handled. Give me a lime juicer any day against
your... Gentlemen, I'm sure you have ample time ahead to continue this technical discussion without boring the ladies.
Very well.
May I ask, what is a lime juicer?
A British ship. A British crew, Mr. Murphy. British ships are known as lime juicers because we're considerate enough to issue lime juice daily to every seaman. Against the scurvy.
Scurvy?
Nothing to worry you, ma'am, believe me. A disease which attacks seamen long at sea without fresh vegetables and such luxuries.
Oh.
But not on British ships, thanks to Captain Cook's lime juice.
Do we have it, this lime juice?
Not necessary, Mrs. Murphy. Your menu will differ somewhat to that of the forecastle, I assure you. But I hear 8 bells.
The
ship's clock, ma'am. For myself and the mate, that spells duty this night, I dear. The ship is at your disposal, all but the forecastle, that is, and we are at your service. Always remembering that our duty is to the ship and your safe arrival.
A pleasant enough encounter, except perhaps for Captain Crispin's seeming displeasure with Mr. Wade's expertise and assertion. But one thing puzzles me. The captain made no mention to us of any sixth passenger. And yet, later that night, when too excited to sleep, I stood taking the air on deck. I saw the captain standing in the shadows away from me, and did hear a bump against the side of the vessel. Then a voice.
Oi, there! Oi, Prince Regent!
Who hails, Prince Regent?
Package! What have you been expecting?
Acknowledge yourself, sir.
Pelham, for Captain Crispin. Has a rain.
Come aboard. But silently.
A tall man, heavily cloaked, then appeared over the side. From my concealment, I saw not his face, but from the manner of his boarding, he was a strong, agile man. He and Captain Crispin then went below in the direction of the cabins and did not return. I put the matter from my mind until one forenoon, after we'd been at sea for several days, I was on deck. We'd been becalmed, but at last a freshening breeze had sprung up.
Oh!
Mast heading the topsails. Those are the topgallants above, and the royals are at the very top of the mast. Oh, looks as if we are to go fully rigged at last.
I've not heard them sing in this manner before.
They've had little opportunity. What is known as a halyard chant here. They haul up the yards to the rhythm. It is a dying practice, though, particularly now that steam is replacing sails so rapidly.
Steam? Oh, no, this is all so exciting and romantic.
Romantic it may seem and look, ma'am, but there is much to be said for steam, particularly when the seas rise or the wind is lost for days on end, as witness our recent predicament. With steam, it matters not at all.
A floating smoke box, Mr. Charles Dickens recently called them.
I also read Mr. Dickens on his Britannia voyage, but he is writing of 7 years ago and of a paddle wheeler to boot. Much has changed since then. I was conversing with the pilot before he left us at Deal. He is of the opinion that there will shortly be few fully rigged passenger ships in service, and I, with him, will not regret their passing.
If you so prefer steam, sir, why then did you take passage on the Prince Regent?
I require to arrange the first possible ship, and very happy I am that fate provided so.
No, but you just said
that
you...
Had it not been so, I would have been denied the fortuitous pleasure of making your acquaintance, Miss Caroline.
Excuse me, ma'am. Captain's compliments. He asked if you'd care to join him aft on the poop deck.
Ah, the royal command, eh, Booth?
Aye, sir. As good as.
I shall be happy to do so. You will excuse me, Mr. Wade.
Of course. Hoping for your return.
Miss Collins, good of you to join us.
I'm indebted for the invitation.
What do you think of her now with a full head of sail? Early sings, doesn't she?
It's a wonderful sight. All those sails. We really are moving now.
Yeah, this is the one we've been waiting for. Coming in from the southwest.
Flying before the wind at last.
Oh, forgive me, Miss Collins. This is Mr. Pelham. Another traveling companion for you.
Mr. Pelham?
Perhaps you've already met.
No.
A pleasure sadly denied me. Miss Collins.
Mr. Pelham has been recovering from a fever, a sickness which has confined him to his cabin since we sailed.
Since we... Oh, but surely, sir...
Poor fellow's been cramped up down there for days.
Hiding. Or so the crew would have it.
Hiding?
Damn rogue Jackson. Begging your pardon, ma'am. I'll have his hide.
You have not heard, then?
Vague rumors of someone. But, Mr. Jackson, the steward...
Spreading idle seamen's superstitions, ma'am.
They have it in the forecastle that I have remained in hiding until we are well at sea.
Forgive me, but
the minister of religion on board has long been considered an omen of ill luck, particularly with regard to bad weather. But they have it wrong. It was merely a fever. And I cannot tell you how good it is to be rid of that cabin and feel the breeze on one's face again.
You picked a good time. Sun's beginning to get some power. Soon be off the Cape Verde if this weather holds. And over the line.
The equator.
And the heat. And the treachery of Good Hope.
How did you fare in the recent storm? I trust it did not disturb you too much.
Storm! Not but a bisky blow.
Mrs. Tully and I found it terrifying enough. Mrs. Tully is my cabin companion.
You think that was a storm? Just wait till the great west winds and the roaring 40s get at us and we start around the Cape.
Oh.
Do not permit the captain's teasing to alarm you, Miss Collins. They revel to see us quake to their tall seamen's stories. A storm at sea, any storm, can be a frightening experience, even to seamen, but they would never admit to it.
I'm relieved to hear it.
Oh, with faith in your ship, knowing the way she handles, there's nothing to fear from a storm.
Perhaps, if you are at the helm and can enjoy such confidence. But we temporary sailors, I prefer to put my faith in the Almighty. Even so, I have seen enough sea storms to experience dread of them.
By which I perceive you know the sea, sir.
I have served by the sea. That is, I have observed the fury of the sea often enough. Indeed, I was born within sight of it, in Suffolk.
Suffolk? Oh, but I, too, am from Suffolk.
Is that so? You did not tell me, Captain.
I did not know, sir.
We obviously must share many memories in common, Miss Collins. How opportune. We may even find that we have friends in common. Tell me from which part you come.
But I was to learn little more of Mr. or Minister Pelham's puzzling appearance and manner for many days to come. He was only occasionally in the saloon or on deck. Strangely, he suggests no Sabbath service, and is not treated, nor does not bear himself as a man of God, remaining more a recluse as we sailed on to take the breeze while it lasted. On a rare, beautiful night, whilst we were off the Cape Verde Islands, the Lascars came aft to dance by moonlight, as they were often to do at the beginning, when the weather was fine.
Come, Mrs. Tully, let you and I show them how it should be done.
Mary, I would not dare.
Do not risk it, Mrs. Tully. Thomas has 8 feet when it comes to the dance.
Infamy! At home I was known as Spring Hill Jack.
But not for your dancing, my love.
Is it only the Lascars that dance, Captain? What of the seamen?
The Oriental in a mum, hardly a British trade.
Oh, I thought all sailors danced the hornpipe.
Only in sea stories, ma'am. Occasionally they'll sing, seamen, I mean. But you're not missing a good deal.
Shanties?
Anything coarse, more often than not. Coarse lot, seamen. Oh. Might be across the line, you may be privileged.
A sort of community sing-song.
Something of the sort, Mr. Murphy. Round the caps and depends on how they feel. No telling with seamen.
And on the 39th day of indifferent progress, of contrary winds, cold, rainy squalls, and then heat, we did cross the line, that famous equator. King Neptune duly arrived in his fiery chariot, drawn by four Lascars dressed as wild men, and proceeded with much high spirit to thoroughly shave and douse the gentlemen, and to drench Mrs. Murphy and myself with thrown water, Mrs. Tully having escaped by locking herself in the cabin. It was whilst I was still in my soaking condition and running to the cabin to change that in the alleyway...
Here she is. Ahoy, reefer, ma'am. All of them.
Mr. Jackson.
That's right, ma'am. You remember me, old Jackson.
Why are you not all away enjoying the ceremony?
Me and me shipmates here.
Shipmates? Dishwasher. Old stewpot idler Jackson.
Stow it.
She was round in the counter.
You was right, old stewpot idler Jackson.
Didn't I tell you?
I would like to enter my cabin, if you please.
Never did see that counter. More proud.
Ain't it, though? Well, didn't I tell you?
I'm beam. Look at that beam. You ever see a feather on a filly?
Mr. Jackson, please allow me to pass. I'm wet and getting cold.
Never did. Not even Big Nelly's shot. Not all. No, never.
Oh, wet. Come on, me lovely. I'll soon warm you up.
Please let me go.
Now, of course. Now, me and me shipmates here. Celebration.
Oh, look, she's a running. Look at that ankle.
Mrs. Tully, let me in.
Bolted.
No. You stay with old Jackson. Nice gentleman. Have a drink.
Leave me be.
It's bolted. I deal with nasty, scummy seamen.
Mrs. Tully, I've locked the door.
No. Told him. Said she's a sport. Told him.
Yeah, you come with us, dearie. We'll show you the ship.
Oh, I will show you the ship all over.
Oh, nice dark place. Yeah.
When Captain Crispin lands.
Hello, Captain Almighty Crispin. Cox.
Oh, pox on him. Throw Captain Crispin to the shark.
Open the door, Mrs. Tully. Let me enter.
Jackson, all of you, move away from that lady.
Mr. Pelham, thank God.
Oh, look it. If it ain't the old minister. Oh, bad luck yourself.
You hear me? Get out, all of you. You've orders about coming this far aft to drink sudden wharf rats.
Weak mouth. Let me have him. I'll slit you for that. You lousy kid.
Get up and close your filthy mouth in the presence of a lady. Hold it.
A minister with a pistol.
And I'll use it on the first one to move. Miss Collins, go into your cabin.
The door is locked from the inside.
Locked? Here, take my cape. Hold it. I wouldn't.
Drape it over your shoulders. You're shivering.
Thank you.
You are unharmed.
Oh, yes. Yes, just wet and chilled.
Keep knocking. Otherwise, stay here until I return. You will be quite safe. I shall be but a moment.
I shall be all right.
Good. Now, okay. Get moving. Yeah. Go on, move! Yeah. And take the greatest care how you go.
Here, I will not have it. So proceed, mister. Let us hear your explanations.
Me, Captain?
You, Mr. Mason. You are the second mate of this vessel, are you not?
Aye, sir.
And as second mate, you are responsible for the discipline of the crew, are you not?
Well, there was naught I could do.
Naught? The cargo is broached. This lady is forced to suffer untold dignities. Naught you can do.
Please, Captain, I'm making no complaint.
Perhaps not, ma'am, but I am. This is insufferable. That you should have been subjected to this sort of treatment on my ship is unforgivable.
Did I hear you correctly, Captain? The cargo has been broached?
It has, sir. And sometime during yesterday, the cargo was broken into and a great deal of liquor removed. Dockside thieving, and in my ship...
Is it necessary to shout so, sir?
You spoke, sir.
But yesterday has left me feeling a little delicate this morning.
If you feel at all ill, Mr. Wade, I suggest you take to the deck. Or to your cabin.
I was under the impression that this was a saloon for the comfort of passengers and officers, not a courts-martial inquiry office.
I will have this matter straight, sir. A lady has been insulted on a ship I command.
Captain, really,
they
I
were very
to...
drunk.
Who was not?
Speak for yourself, sir.
Oh, Captain, you are truly a remarkable man.
Now, perhaps we may proceed. These men you routed, Mr. Pelham, Jackson, the carpenter, and the other...
Laszlo, sir, a seaman.
I am conversant with my crew, Mr. Laszlo. A whoring cutthroat, begging your pardon, ma'am. Two idlers and a useless ape.
They did me no actual harm, sir.
Thanks to Mr. Pelham, apparently. Tell me, sir, when you were dealing with these scoundrels, did you by any chance hear any mention between them of the cargo?
No, but I only heard their noise from my cabin and looked to see what was afoot.
Miss Collins?
They said nothing of any cargo. Truth is, I'm sure they did not know what they were saying or doing.
And you, Pelham, handed them over to this exemplary officer?
Yes.
Were you drunk too, mister? You reckon
that? Mr. Mason was not drunk, Captain.
No? Well, I trust not. He was supposed to be on watch. Get back on deck, mister. I want those three kept in irons until such time as I decide what to do with them.
Aye, sir.
And tell the mate to attend me here. I want that forecastle turned inside out.
Aye, aye, sir.
You should not cover for him, Pelham. He's a soak. And a poor officer, weak. Too inclined to ally with the men. You should recognize a bad officer well enough.
I spoke only of what I saw, Captain. He had been drinking, certainly. But he was not drunk. At least, far less than most.
Miss Collins... How can you forgive me that this should have happened? I'm at your mercy. I can only again offer my most profuse apologies.
I would not wish for them to be punished severely. They were not responsible. Mr. Jackson has always been most courteous.
Unfortunately, ma'am, we've got so vast or able a crew that I could keep them incarcerated indefinitely, but believe me, they'll be punished for their deeds. They'll not repeat it, I'll be bound.
What of the stolen cargo? Has it been found?
No, sir. And therein lies the true crime. This is a mixed crew. Untold quantities of alcoholic spirits on the loose constitutes a real danger to any ship if conditions go badly.
Mason said you wanted me, Captain.
Yeah, I do.
Oh, do you require me any further, Captain?
No, ma'am. I'm indebted for your patience.
Then I think, with your permission, I will go on deck for a while.
I should, while the weather holds. I have a feeling that we may be in for another blow before too long.
Oh, indeed, I hope not. Good day, then, gentlemen.
Miss Collins.
Good day, Miss Collins. And again, my regret that you should have been so inconvenient.
Edgar, hold!
Miss Collins.
You called, Mr. Pelham?
I wondered if I might accompany you on deck.
Please, I would be delighted.
The captain is arranging with the mate for a search of the ship. I took my opportunity to escape. I am so sorry you had to be involved in that somewhat unpleasant investigation.
What will happen to those men? You will not have them lashed.
No, ma'am. This is 1854. A man must commit some truly heinous crime in these days before such punishment is rendered.
Oh, I'm relieved. For my part, I cannot begin to thank you enough, Mr. Pelham, for what you did. I'm much in your debt.
No need. I am only too grateful for a reason to have been of some little service.
I was worried as to how you would manage without your coat.
As you see, I have another.
I would have returned it last evening, but it was a little damp. I will press it for you.
I would not think of giving you so much trouble.
It is of no trouble. I would like to do so. I have been looking over the things in my trunk. Many of them are mildewed after 5 weeks at sea, I fear. But I do have some pressing to do.
Then I shall be most grateful. Did Mrs. Tully give any explanation for locking you out?
She thought they had come for her.
For Mrs. Tully?
For the water drenching.
Oh, I see.
Any woman would understand. Your wife. I'm sure she would appreciate Mrs. Tully's dilemma in the same manner.
I have no wife, Miss Collins. I have never married.
Oh, I'm sorry. I did not mean to pry.
Not at all. Perhaps in the fulfillment of time.
I just thought, only because most ministers appear to be.
I suppose that is true.
This way!
Search would appear to be on.
Will they search the whole ship?
The forecastle first, the lazarette.
Lazarette?
Oh, a sort of storeroom in the after part of the hold.
Oh.
But of course, those searching may well have done the hiding.
You would appear to know a great deal of ships and seamen, like Mr. Wade.
Wade? Is that so? But I would not say I knew ships that well.
Mr. Pelham? No, it would be presumptuous of me.
What is it, Miss Collins?
You will think I... But I've been wondering what Captain Crispin could mean just now in referring to Mr. Mason. That you should recognize a poor officer only too well.
I don't know. Perhaps that I should have some acquaintance with the qualities of leadership.
As a minister?
A minister should undoubtedly have some such knowledge, certainly. He is often called upon to lead in all manner of ways. To appreciate the value of discipline and...
Tolerance?
Well, that, of course. Miss Collins, you are undoubtedly puzzled by something.
A little, sir. I will confess it.
And what puzzles you?
Well, yesterday, with those men. Your manner and bearing, so commanding and authoritative.
Hardly the way of a minister, you think?
Oh, please do not misunderstand. I was most impressed and so very, very grateful. But, well, the pistol...
We are traveling to a hard, new country, Miss Collins. A beautiful country, to be sure, but still unknown for its greater part, and with many dangers for the unwary immigrant.
Forgive me, sir. I do not mean to offer any criticism.
And I do not accept it as such. I can appreciate your puzzlement. You no doubt also think it strange that I should so strongly advocate punishment for these men.
Only inasmuch as you might perhaps have seen them as weak men requiring your Christian guidance rather than punishment. But now I do presume, ashamedly.
I perceive that your compassion and sincerity is equaled only by your quick and ready intelligence, Miss Collins. I take no offense. I only ask that you might trust me.
Trust you, sir? In what manner? I do not understand.
Perhaps one day, soon. Perhaps soon. What now appears to you odd concerning my behavior.
Odd? No. I would not dare to imply any such thing.
But you are right. You have known ministers. I must indeed appear to have a great many shortcomings. But believe me, there is a reason for them. When I feel I am able, I shall be happy and relieved to explain it all to you. Until then.
Mr. Pelham and his intriguing statement was much on my mind. I was mystified. And more, for as we continued to drift helplessly in the doldrums and the days turned into weeks, I must secretly confess with alarm that I found myself thinking more and more, and with favor, of the gentleman himself. Foolish thoughts. Perhaps it is the special nature of this strange, unreal shipboard life. I know only that his occasional appearances, our infrequent meetings,
were anticipated and coincided with a pleasurable warmth within me. As on what I now know was to be the last of the happier days approaching the Cape of Good Hope.
I swear she's a turtle. Murphy, you're responsible for a turtle. She's not a baby at all.
I will confess it to you now, ma'am. There was one brief period before we met when turtle soup was my main sustenance.
Oh, she certainly enjoys the water. Look how she kicks and splashes.
She's an angel. Even so, in this case, Mrs. Murphy, overexposure. Her tender skin. One ought to be careful.
Yes, you are right.
Oh, but she enjoys it so.
Even so, Mrs. Tully is right. Enough is enough. Murphy, remove your child from the water.
Aye, aye, ma'am. Go on, Tiddler. Out you go.
That is an uncommonly strange fish, I see.
Turtle? A fish? In truth, I have a strange record as a father.
I'm not sure you should approach Mr. Pell.
Not approach, ma'am.
The lady's not exactly dressed to receive gentlemen callers, as well you can see.
I take your point, Mrs. Murphy. See, I will turn my back until proper arrangements have been made.
She is but a year old.
But ladies have very long memories.
Have this towel, Mr. Murphy.
Thank you, ma'am. Hey, stop kicking, youngster.
That is an enviable bath the lady has. What is it, an old sail made over? It appears to function ideally.
It was a thought of the captain's.
Was it now?
I do not wonder you sound surprised, sir.
He saw we were having difficulties trying to bath her.
At a time when he was still considering his passengers.
He has had too much on his mind recently.
One of the seamen found the old sail and stitched it up. Has he not done it beautifully?
If we lose any more to the storms, they'll probably want it back. there. One dry Miss Victoria Murphy.
I'll take her below.
May I take her?
Of course. It's a pity. I like her to get as much air as possible, but too much sun.
Come, little one.
Tom, you will collapse the bath.
Simply done.
Let me help you.
Oh, she's not growing too heavy for you, Mrs. Tully.
No, not in the least.
One advantage of such a life. No need to worry about spilled water.
Not this sort, anyway.
It just folds. That's it. I'm indebted to you, Mr. Pelham.
I think Mrs. Murphy is wonderful. She's so capable, always so bright and cheerful.
It is a big undertaking for any mother, bringing one so young halfway across the world.
That is my meaning. I would be in one constant flutter of anxiety, I'm sure.
She makes light enough of it, or appears to. But of late, she worries me a little. She seems to be more and more troubled by some premonition, I suppose you'd call it.
Concerning the baby?
I'm not sure what it is. She will not talk of it, even to me. But since that first big storm in the bay, some sort of fixed fear grows in her mind.
But she told me that Victoria was not affected when the ship rose.
Lies and gurgles most of the time. Whilst her doting parents are flung green from their bunks, she just lies there laughing and gurgling. Was that the lookout?
Where?
Port bow. There she is.
Can you sight her?
It's a steamer.
Coming up from the Cape.
And homeward bound.
Look at her go.
A big ship. Look at all that smoke.
At least she is moving.
And fast. Now will you see what I mean about steam, Miss Caroline? Look at her. And look at us.
But she carries a sail.
Just a topsail. Though why it is...
She makes her own breeze. I must make sure the good captain sees this. For his edification.
A point in Wade's favor, I feel. He and the captain have all but come to blows arguing about steam and sail.
She's seen us.
Sounds like it.
Do you think she will come close?
It is possible. It just depends.
I have letters written. If she does, perhaps the captain would pass them.
Why not?
He has refused before when we have spoken to a ship.
Why not ask him again?
If only we could really speak to them. Talk to them properly, I mean. Each of us. To other people. Make contact. People from Australia, perhaps.
And the heading for home.
You will need to hurry with your letters if you are to be successful.
Yes, he must. I will fetch them and ask him.
Homeward bound. England. Somerset.
Mm-hmm. It makes one think.
You too?
I have spent much time away, but... Yes, me too.
It would help if we could voyage like that, regardless of wind and temperament.
Perhaps from her we can get a more definite idea of our position.
That is what I meant. If only they would inspire a little more confidence. But the officers appear to be as much in the dark as we are.
Navigating the great oceans is difficult. The sea can be fickle and deceptive.
Not for them, it seems. Perhaps they spend less time at loggerheads. You think she's making for us?
Not as yet.
I must fetch Alice. She would not want to miss this. Shall I tell you what worries me most, Mr. Pelham?
Mm-hmm.
What happens if our progress continues so slow and erratic?
The food and water.
We can only be victualled for so many weeks. How many days, weeks have we lost already?
She's not changing course. I doubt Miss Collins will be lucky with her letters.
I'll go and fetch Alice and Mrs. Dolly.
Let me see.
Forgive me if I take the liberty to scoff,
the
sir.
The double six, I think.
Again? This is witchcraft.
Oh, Mr. Murphy, do you not agree?
What is that, Captain?
You're an engineer.
A mining engineer.
This fellow Brunel. I say he's a fool with his talk of a canal through the Isthmus of Panama.
He is a far-sighted man. He has proved his ideas well enough so far. Excuse me, gentlemen. It is my turn to play. Forgive me, ladies. Now, let me see.
You say the man is not a fool.
There. Oh. See what you can do with that.
I will not discuss it further, sir.
Is it my turn? Mine, Mrs. Tully. But I think Mr. Murphy has me beaten.
Thomas, I must see you.
Alice, my dear. Come, join us. Sit down.
By all means. You are here all too infrequently, Mrs. Murphy.
No, Thomas, you must come.
Mrs. Murphy, you look quite pale. Is anything amiss?
It's the baby.
Victoria.
What is it?
I think she's ill. You must come and see.
Right away.
I must get back to her. I had to fetch you. I'm so afraid. Please come.
Alice, wait.
Shall I go with her?
Thank you, but it's probably nothing serious.
Oh, very unfortunate.
But she cannot be ill, only this afternoon.
I would not concern yourself too greatly, Miss Caroline. Baby ailments are frequent and usually slight.
You are an authority, sir.
Not concerned.
No, ladies, Wade is right. The once. You'll see. Right as ninepence by the morning. Right as ninepence.
How is she, Mr. Murphy?
No change, I fear.
She's worse. She's weakening. She's going to die.
Alice, you're not to talk this way. She is not going to die.
Have you had no rest again?
Some.
But it has been nearly 2 weeks.
We take it in turns, but she's been so restless. Does this burning fever...
She's quiet now. She's near death.
You are tired. All this time.
I've known it for a long time. A long, long time.
Alice, how could you possibly know such a thing? You only distress yourself more.
I just know. I knew it must happen.
Dear Mrs. Murphy, why not let me keep watch whilst you take a little air on deck? The breeze is strong now. It'll make you feel better.
You're very kind, but I could not.
Mrs. Tully offered to watch throughout the night, but she will not leave her.
It's growing near her time. She needs me. I must be with her every second.
If only we had medicine, knew what was wrong. If only Crispin would listen.
We have all tried
to. She will die here. At sea. You know what that means? I've seen it. Those deep, black waters. I could not stand that.
Calm yourself. Victoria is going to get well.
Those cold, hungry waters.
I couldn't bear for her to be cast into the sea. Please, don't let that happen. Promise me you'll not let that happen. Promise me. Promise. Promise me.
She has been talking of nothing else for days.
Is there nothing I can do?
Stay here with Alice for a while, if you will.
Anything.
I will go once more and plead with Crispin. And by God, if he will not heed me this time.
I tell you again, Mr. Murphy, it is out of the question.
But my child is dying. Does that mean nothing to you?
If that is true, no one could regret it more than I, but... What you request is impossible. There is a code of the sea to which I, as master...
Code? My wife's mind is affected. The child. They need help. Medical help, and quickly. You must find land.
Sir, as I continue to tell you, we are hundreds of miles from the nearest harbor.
Never mind harbor. Just put us ashore. Anywhere.
There is no land close enough, and even if there were, I am not permitted to make...
I thought you were supposed to be a minister, Pelham. Can't you make him see what he's doing?
Gladly, if I could. Captain Crispin maintains that even if he could make a landfall, getting in close enough to put you ashore would endanger the safety of his ship and the lives of all on board.
And what of the safety? The life of my child? My wife's reason? Do they count for naught?
Do you know a course for the nearest land, Captain?
What are you suggesting, sir?
I merely asked a question.
One I refuse to answer. Dare you question my competence on my own poop deck?
When so much is at stake, one does not consider words.
Then, at the risk of appearing heartless, I must point out that on the high seas or voyages of this magnitude, death has always been an inevitable possibility, a fact unceremoniously accepted.
Unceremonious? 4 days ago, I beseeched you. Soon after the seriousness was apparent. By now, she might...
Mr. Murphy! I am responsible for the safety of this vessel and the soul of every person aboard her. I cannot, will not, jeopardize that trust in a dangerous, foolhardy attempt to save one. Any more than I or my crew would ourselves expect to be saved at such a price.
Just a boat. A ship's boat. Anywhere, so long as it is on land.
How many times? Either take days, perhaps weeks. To take a ship such as this onto an uncharted shore with its reefs, the dangers of foundering is impossible.
Will you check your navigation, see if any harbor is near, or any coastline with safe anchorage?
I implore you. Somewhere lies land. Give them a chance.
There is a storm brewing. Surely you feel it, hear it. It'll be upon us within the hour. If I know these latitudes, it'll take all our resources to survive at all, let alone to try and turn about.
Crispin, I warn you. If my child dies at sea, if anything happens to my wife, as sure as God is my judge, I will kill you. Just as surely as you and your drunken inhumanity.
Easy, Murphy. Such talk will not help anyone.
I will overlook your threats and abuse, Mr. Murphy, in view of your state of mind. But I will order you to leave my deck.
I mean it. I mean every word of it.
Come, Mr. Murphy, you will do no good. No good at all.
Sweet, adorable little Victoria Murphy passed into heaven that same black, stormy night, aged 11 and a half months. Sometime the next day, she who had never lived to speak a word, to give hurt, to know joy and happiness, was committed to the deep waters of the ocean forever.
Keep her in thy sight, O Lord.
and commit her soul to Almighty God. Receive our little sister, O Lord. Have mercy. Have mercy.
If ever a minister's word might have eased suffering and pain, provided a justification for the continuance of faith. But with a heavy heart, I recalled that throughout, Mr. Pelham did not as much leave his cabin. Apart from that brief, tragic interlude of calm, we have sailed on, beset by storms. For the rest of that harrowing day, throughout the following and into the night, we were too sad and heartsick to be affected. But on that second night, as we lay fully dressed, trying to rest, I slowly became conscious of the knocking.
There it is again.
Who's there?
Mr. Murphy?
Just a moment, Mr. Murphy. I'm coming.
Mrs. Murphy. It must be Mrs. Murphy.
Is Alice with you?
Why, no.
Oh, what is wrong?
It's Alice. What? She's gone. I wonder...
Gone?
I've been sitting up with her, keeping watch since... Well, I must have dozed off. When I awoke just now, she was gone.
But where could she go?
In her state of mind, God knows. I must keep looking.
Try not to worry, I'm sure... I must go and help.
Something terrible has happened, I know it.
Perhaps on deck...
Both of us.
It will be rough. Could you not rouse the others? I will warn the watch officer. The captain must be called.
The others? Wade?
And Mr. Pelham. Oh, hurry! Hurry!
Mrs. Tully, is anything wrong?
Mrs. Murphy has disappeared.
What? When?
Mr. Murphy called in great anguish a moment ago. He's searching for her.
I will come at once.
Perhaps if you had seen fit earlier...
I am aware of your disapproval, Mrs. Tully, but this is hardly the time. Has the captain been told?
Miss Collins has gone to warn the watch.
I must find Murphy at once.
Disappeared? Disappeared?
Aye, sir.
What do you mean, disappeared? Who has?
Mrs. Murphy. We can't find her.
Then I leave orders I was not to be disturbed on any account.
Aye, Captain, but...
Am I to get no peace? What?
They're all looking. Wayne, Pelham. Murphy's in a bit of a state. Reckon she might have...
Might have what?
Well, reckon she was a bit unhinged. He's been sitting up with her since the kid. In case she tried anything.
Tried what, Blaster? You're talking gibberish.
Jumped. Reckon she might.
Overboard? Why would you do a damn fool thing like that? My God, this is not a ship. This is a kindergarten. It's a conspiracy, a plot to drive me insane.
Aye, sir.
Insane, do you hear?
Aye, sir. But what will I do?
Do? Do? How do you expect me to know? Call the mate. Tell him to look for her.
Aye, aye, sir.
And keep out of my quarters.
Just got aft.
Tell him. Boarding whales down forward.
My God.
Murphy found it. He's convinced now.
He's gone for the captain.
But he could have slipped the wet deck.
We've got to stop him reaching Crispin. If you find him, get him down to my cabin. Keep him there.
I'll try. Gotta start. He was heading out.
Mister, I gave you orders. Murphy.
He's gone, Crispin. First my baby. Now Alice.
Your wife? No, no, I'm sure she's...
Gone, Crispin. You killed them. First my child, now my wife.
Murphy, now listen to me.
She couldn't bear to think of her down there. She made me promise one thing. But you wouldn't listen, would you?
Oh, there's nothing I could do. You must see I could do nothing.
I promised her not in the sea. I promised her and failed her. Now she has gone.
Stay back. Stay where you are. I'm unwell. You'll only bring destruction upon yourself.
Destruction? What is there left to destroy? I would have joined them already. I knew, you see, even before I found the broken ship's rail. But first, you must pay for your crime.
You're fools. Mason.
I warned
you. Get back. You don't know what you're doing. Keep away.
Murphy, save me.
Murphy, don't be a fool.
Damn you, leave me. Please.
Stop, Murphy. Get your hands off me.
He killed her,
Mom.
Not this way. Get his arm.
Don't let me.
Sorry, Murphy. Only way.
He was throttling me.
You are right, Murphy.
Let me go. Let go.
Oh, I'll have him. He was trying to murder me.
Not now.
Oh, no, I see. Let him flop.
Shut up. She's dead. Tell him she's dead. My Alice, she killed herself.
An accident. The black night, a wet deck.
No, no. She said once, Victoria, alone and cold. Said she needed her now more
than... Come along. Come below with me. This is no good.
When we reach land...
Can't you see what he's suffering?
You have no jurisdiction on my ship. I command this vessel and I shall see...
Crispin, you are a fool. I make myself entirely responsible for Mr. Murphy.
I am master of this ship.
Come, Murphy, let us get out of here.
What am I going to do?
Flog! You hear?
Try not to dwell on it now. Let me help you. We'll go to my cabin. You shall move in with me for the time being.
Pelham, what am I to do? What am I to do?
In the night, swung southwest.
Are you going to anchor and wait, Mr. Bull?
Beast. You know what I'm talking about?
A rough idea. You're going to tack across the wind. You've got room in fat water. With the wind at southwest, she should point up, say, 6 points, making 6.5 from the wind. And that means on the starboard tack, she'll steer eastwards of south-southeast. You will hold her on that tack as long as you can, as being nearest the ship's course.
Yeah. Well, that's about it, roughly. Mm. I thought you were a steam merchant.
Say, rather a convert, eh? Is Crispin still hors de combat?
You mean, is he still sulking down there? You can then see for yourself.
It's been 3 days.
Locked himself in like a frightened virgin. Murphy must have scared the hell out of him.
Yes. How did you learn of it?
Jackson says he's a fuming jelly, reckons he's gone lunatic.
Jackson could be prejudiced, I feel.
Oh, he's the only one to see him since.
All clear and stationed.
Forecastle head?
Sailmaker and carpenter. Ah, oh, they're getting a mite salty. Alaska's mainly. Grub and water shortage again.
Oh, the hell. We'll take the fall in May and I'll take off.
Oh, yeah.
Can I be of any assistance?
You may know their theory, Wade, but this is seaman's work. Just keep yourself out of the way.
By all means.
Keep her clean, fool!
Aye, aye!
Full for ten. Ready aboard! Neo!
Fuming jelly, according to Jackson, apparently the only one to have seen him. Gone lunatic was his graphic description, so Booth reports.
But to lock himself away, leaving Mr. Booth in command, it seems highly irresponsible.
Bless you, ma'am, some of the less reputable sailing masters lock themselves off in their large staterooms at the start of a voyage and never reappear until landfall.
Oh, surely.
The mates run the ship.
It is true, but on lesser voyages than this, I hazard.
Booth also knows that the murder
Murphy it isn't, by the way. Jackson again.
That is a pity.
Oh, why? Does it matter?
Only that Crispin threatened to make trouble for him. And could, once we land.
He couldn't. Not under the circumstances. That poor man didn't.
Apart from all else, his pride has been hurt. And in a man like Crispin, that could mean trouble.
Fairham! It seems I am obliged to seek you out.
And very glad I am to see you, Captain.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back.
I've been expecting to receive you with your apologies, but it appears I must come to you.
Apologies? From me? For what, Captain?
You know perfectly well for what. For trying to usurp my authority on my own ship.
I am not aware that
you are perfectly aware, sir. Perfectly. I demand that you hand this man Murphy over to my authority.
Hand over? Demand?
Demand, sir. Demand. Do I not speak plain?
Captain, you look unwell.
I would order you to be silent, ma'am.
No, just a minute.
And you particularly, Wade, I've had far more than enough of you.
Oh, really? Now you listen to me.
As for you, Pelham, you may think you are bloody important. You may be in London, in Australia, too, for all I know or care. But you have no jurisdiction on my ship. Yeah, you have no jurisdiction on my ship.
You are being particularly offensive, Captain, and may I remind you that there are ladies.
Damn you, sir. Damn you, you theatricals. Be damned, you, I say.
Captain Crispin, you are either ill, sir, or drunk. I would opinion both.
That is my affair entirely, ma'am, but you be quiet.
You are wrong, sir. It is our affair, and very much so.
Mrs. Tully, I...
Please, Mr. Pelham, I have remained silent long enough. I have had just about all I can endure of this man and his irresponsible behavior.
How dare you?
We are your passengers, sir. God help us. We came aboard this vessel in good faith, placing our lives and well-being in your hands. You have repaid that responsibility by becoming increasingly churlish, childish, and incompetent.
You
overindulge yourself. You are found lacking in every way. It is no fault of yours that we are not already shipwrecked, let alone weeks overdue. At times of great distress, when we need your guidance most, you lock yourself away, leaving everything to your officers and an undisciplined crew. You are not fit to command yourself, sir, let alone a vessel with human souls in your hands. As for Mr. Murphy, that poor man is to be pitied, not pilloried.
I will not
remember. He's falling.
Now, easy, Skipper. Take your hands off me, sir. I'm quite careful.
He should go to his cabin, Mr. Wade. Yes.
Between us.
No need. I do not need...
You need rest and care, Captain. Yes. That is obvious. And I intend to see you get it. Come with us, if you please, Mr. Wade.
Come on, Skipper. Let me give you a hand.
I will bring your wrap. Stay with Mr. Pelham. I can manage. Mr. Wade can get into his bed. Then we shall see.
Are you sure, Mrs. Tully? I fear the malady is of his mind, and as such...
All the more reason someone must try and help him, Mr. Pelham. He needs a woman's care.
Well?
Mrs. Tully, all those weeks... So retiring, so much in her shell, and such strength.
Of purpose and of word. I doubt he has ever received such a drubbing.
You think she'll be all right?
I think she may be able to handle him, if anyone here can.
I had no conception she could be so forthright, vexed and worried as she has been.
Crispin is a much troubled man. The long, hard years at sea. The fear now that the days of sailing masters are numbered. He's been worrying, too, about the broached cargo, so little was recovered.
Perhaps I should go to her.
Wade is there.
Yes.
I had thought I might take a turn around the deck. Would you consider accompanying me? It might do you good.
I think it would.
A little air, after all this upheaval.
But you have no cause to explain any of this to me, sir.
It is of the greatest importance to me that I should... that you should understand.
If it will please you.
Since that first night we talked, I have felt hoped. But so much has happened. And then the unhappy Murphys. I fear you must have been thinking badly of me.
I have not thought badly of you.
I do hope not.
I wanted to. when that sweet little baby died and Mr. and Mrs. Murphy were in so much need of consolation.
You realize now why I could do nothing. It would have been wrong.
I convinced myself that you must have good reason.
If you think back, I never actually claimed to be at the church.
Not in so many words, perhaps. But in truth, you did lead me to believe
I spoke of ministers and superstition. That was enough. But I allowed everybody to believe. You included. That was hard.
There were odd things that night on the equator. Also, you see, I watched you come aboard.
You saw me?
Secretly. That first night whilst we were anchored off New Reach.
You were on deck.
When Captain Crispin said you had been ill in your cabin since before we sailed.
And you have never disclosed what you saw.
Again, sir, I felt you must have your own good reasons. Also, it was no affair of mine.
Then you must have been thinking all manner of things. Liar, cheat, heaven knows what else.
I have been puzzled.
The idea was not mine. It was felt unnecessarily, I still think, that there should be some subterfuge to cover my activities.
I see. Or at least
I also carry a great deal of government money with me. On a voyage such as this, with unknown quantities in the crew, even among the passengers, care has to be taken.
That I can understand.
If they thought me a minister of religion, the crew would expect me to keep much to my cabin, in view of their superstitious attitude. To the officers and the rest, an unsociable priest was better out of the way. I could safeguard the money and not get involved, or so it was thought. Oh, and very unpleasant it has been, too.
Then you are a government official?
Not exactly. I hold an army rank.
Perhaps your name is not even Pelham.
Oh, that at least is authentic, I assure you.
And Suffolk?
That, too. I go to Australia with a special job. Since the colony of Victoria was established 3 years ago, there has been a great deal of unrest in the gold fields amongst the diggers. Riots, burning, murder even, stemming mainly from land claims, unlicensed mines, license fees. More is anticipated.
I have read something of this.
My mission is to try to stop any future outbreak. Gold fever is a volatile disease, Miss Collins, and compelling. Many of the administrators there and most of the law enforcement officials have themselves taken to the gold fields. Even sailors from ships such as this, they are deserting to them in great numbers. Which is another reason I've had to be careful. A short time ago, we had only 44 troops left who were still loyal. Last year, 50 policemen had to be sent out from London to help them. I am to take command of the combined units.
But should you be telling me? Does Captain Crispin know?
A little. Not my real purpose, nor of the money. No one does. Except you.
I am indeed honored, but
perhaps you can see now why, under orders, I was forced to deceive you. Let you believe I was something I am not. I can only say that to do so has latterly caused me much concern.
Is that why you confide in me now?
Crispin's outburst, his talk of jurisdiction and importance of theatricals, it could only have confused you further. More importantly, over these past few weeks, I have become increasingly aware that your opinion of me matters a great deal.
I'm very flattered, sir.
I cannot presume to say more, not at this time. All this must be disturbing enough for you. I fear also that we may still have many obstacles to overcome before we reach land. It is enough for now that I ask you not to think too unkindly of me, not as some philandering impostor out to deceive you, but as someone to whom your opinion and favor means very much.
In the days and weeks which followed, Major Pelham, as I now know him, was a tower of strength. Without his support, without the consoling belief that only our feckless position held him back from saying what I so waited to hear, I do not know how my spirit could have withstood the rigors and pain of this journey. Mrs. Tully gave devotedly of her declining strength to the care of the captain, only for him to return to deck and within a day or two begin again raving and abusing everyone, so much that the second mate refused duty and went forward with the crew. Indeed, when shortly after passing the islands of Amsterdam and St. Paul's, a beautiful sailing ship came close, the captain spoke so strangely to her that she must have known he was mad. August the 18th, 1854. Day 153. Over 5 months at sea now without once touching land. All day there has been much confusion as we awoke to find ourselves amongst the breakers and threatened with almost certain shipwreck. Some believed them to be the reefs of Kangaroo Island, but no one seemed sure. Only a miraculous change of wind has saved us from perishing on the fearsome rocks. Even now that we are clear of them, we are still not completely out of danger, for fear the wind should change again. We have been told not to undress, to be ready in case. Since darkness, there has again been great disturbances on deck. Men running, voices raised. As I lay here waiting, I imagined once that I heard his voice calling my name. But it could not be.
Miss Caroline, Miss Collins.
Oh, there it is.
Miss Collins, it's I. Wait.
It is again. I told you.
Yes, all right. Yes.
Sleeping. While you were sleeping. They're back. At the door.
It is I, ladies. Wake up, please.
Mr. Wade, I'm coming. Oh. It's all right, Mrs. Tully. I'm coming.
This surely must be the end.
Mr. Wade.
Hurry, as quickly as you can, Miss Caroline. Into the saloon.
We're on the rocks.
The breakers.
No, not the breakers. I will explain later. Can Mrs. Tully manage?
Oh, yes, I think so. Mrs. Tully, come, dear.
We're finished.
Not at all, Mrs. Tully.
We are to go to the saloon.
Saloon? You're just keeping it from me.
That's it. Lean on me, if you wish.
It is just a precaution, ma'am. Mr. Pelham...
Mr. Pelham? Is he all right?
Perfectly. There's a little uneasiness about the crew, that is all. And he...
Uneasiness? Yes. What do you mean?
Well, I will explain in the saloon. I should bring some covering, something for warmth. Off your bunk, dear.
Yes.
Shorten sail! Lee-ho! Keep the helm up, Daniel!
Will you listen to me, you raving lunatic? Pelham must be right.
You insubordinate puppy, you talk to me of mutiny. This is where the mutiny is. Up helm, I say.
Then where is the watch? Tell me that.
Indeed, where are they?
Came back a few minutes ago to find him on his own, standing there raving and bellowing orders. They're all gone, every man jack of them. I've had to lash the wheel.
And by the full sail!
Where is Mason?
Still part with the crew ever since he roasted him once too often.
Captain, what happened to the duty watch?
Watch, sir? What the devil are you talking about? Get off my deck. I'm preparing to come alongside.
Raving mad. He thinks we're just putting into Gravesend.
We must get him out of harm's way.
Blast the book of duty. I can't hear you whispering. Treachery. Surrounded by treachery. But I'll see you swinging for it.
For your own safety, Captain. Get below.
Safety? It's your necks for the stretching, all of you. Within the hour, you'll be in custody, I promise you. Get those men aloft, mister. Wait for me. Come.
Who's that?
Easy, it's Wade. Everything in order?
So far, they're in the saloon with Murphy.
Well done.
Ah, Mr. Pilot, welcome aboard. We're all ready for you.
What, pilot?
His mind's completely gone. We were just discussing how to get him below.
You'll find everything shipshape, Mr. Pilot. Everything ready, as always, under my command.
Yes, thank you, Captain.
I've had about as much as I can take of him.
Carry on then, sir.
By all means, sir. He's certainly not going to help matters.
Anything happened?
The duty watch have deserted. One thing, if they are to come at all, it will be before daylight breaks.
There's not many of them left with strength enough.
Enough to make things unpleasant if they were of the mind.
It would need to be the one effort.
We could break out the flares.
You have flares?
We always carry them. The steamers have been running down too much sail in the dark.
It might
Quiet.
Be a good...
You hear something?
There. On deck, midships. Starboard side. Someone moving aft towards us. Listen.
It's so quiet now. Even the captain's...
That is a good sign.
Are you sure, Mr. Murphy?
How about Mrs. Tully? How are you feeling now, ma'am?
I'm comfortable, Mr. Murphy, thank you. Do not concern yourself on my account.
Perhaps Mr. Pelham was wrong. Perhaps all is well after all.
Perhaps. Let us hope so.
He is a fine man. A good man. You will be a very fortunate woman one day, if God should grant you escape from this nightmare.
How can you say so, ma'am?
God has left me my sight, my dear.
Hush. You tire yourself.
No. For the first time in many days, I feel my mind is calm, not confused. Strange. I seem lately to have had so many dreams.
It is the lack of food, the thirst. The weakness brings these odd fancies. Hallucinations, they call them.
Is that so, Mr. Murphy?
Once we're on land again, you'll soon be as strong as ever.
And I have a feeling that cannot be long now.
That is indeed good news.
If we are off Kangaroo Island, we are very close. I'm sure of it.
Yes. But forgive me. I think I would like to sleep now.
But, Mrs. Tully...
Let her sleep. It is better that she should.
I'm suddenly afraid.
For Mrs. Tully? She only sleeps.
If harm should come to her now, when she is so close, after all she has been through...
How many can you see?
No, just shadows. But they're not moving now.
Getting ready to rush us.
Be ready with that flare. When they start to...
Scum! Mutinous, thieving scum! Get out there! Insubordination!
For God's sake, what's he trying to do? He thinks they can't hear him.
No! Lunatic!
Come on, lunatic! Proper!
Where's that pilot? Get him aloft!
Been aloft, all right. Dangling from the rattling yardarm.
No bloodshed, lads, though. You said there wouldn't be no bloodshed.
Shut your mouth. The days for giving orders is over, Mr. Bloody Mason.
I'm taking over. If I'm going to talk for us,
I'll do as you're rattling told. With your fancy dancing along of him from a yardarm.
You going to rush him, Leslo?
We do like I say. You'll talk to a Mason when I tell you. Ludi?
Yeah?
Jackson, go with Ludi. Get over and up the port side. Get behind them while we keep them talking.
Me?
Got it?
Yeah, get them from behind.
But you said the women. You said I could...
Women?
Oh, you aiming to cross me, you idling.
No, of course not. But you said the young'un. You reckon that...
You... I've got plans about that. Now, get moving.
Come on.
And you, mister, you get it ready to sound like you're parleying.
Mr. Murphy.
It will be all right. Mr. Pelham knows how to handle things.
There's just he and Mr. Wade.
And Mr. Booth. Do you think you could give me a hand with Mrs. Tully?
How? What are you going to do?
Just take her feet. Behind the edge of the sideboard, away from the door. Slowly.
Why? For what purpose?
Gently. I think she's unconscious.
Unconscious?
If so, it is a blessing. That's better. It's not much, but it is the best.
What's going to happen?
I don't know, Miss Collins. I should be up there.
Go, Mr. Murphy. They need you more than we do. We shall be all right.
No. I promised. I gave my word.
What's that?
She's round in the corner,
round
in the beam. Come on, little
girl.
Come on, God. Steady.
We know you're in there, you and your old biddy. Your new captain Laszlo, wants to work with you.
Keep well back. Down beside Mrs. Tully. Behind the edge of the sideboard. And have courage.
I can't keep him quiet for much longer. As long as he thinks you're the pilot. Keep him talking. Try and persuade him below.
I've tried. I think I'm talking more gibberish than he is.
Mason.
Booth! You up there?
Try and keep Crispin back out of the way.
Right.
You hear me, Booth?
Answer him and be ready with the flare.
I'm here. What do you want? We want the party. We want to turn.
We? Joined up with that scum, have you? Showing your true colors, are you?
You'd better listen.
I don't party with no mutineers. Get back to your rat holes where you belong.
You listen, mister. And listen good. You got no choice. Are you nice?
Nice.
Hear him.
Say your piece.
We're coming up.
No.
From there.
You heard him, mister. We're coming up.
From there or not at all?
He'll have been right, my lads. You're going to try and stop us, mister? Come on!
Quick, the flare.
Come on, my armies!
Help! From the rear. Two of them.
Get to Wade.
Come
here,
flare! Into
him, me bucko! That's far enough, Laszlo!
Into him!
One more step and I fire!
Put him down!
Go back! Laszlo's for murder!
My son, you get cross us with your...
Don't follow! Oh! Ah!
Bloody old such traitor! See what happens to turncoats! Come on, forward!
Take him over! He was warned! You heard, Mason! He intended murder! Move back, the rest of you! Back!
You all right, Holm?
Yes.
Jackson ran. Booth settled the other. Not before he got Crispin.
What, badly?
Bludgeon, but breathing.
Mason, Laszlo knifed him. He was trying to stop them.
The girl.
What is it, Mason?
Laszlo! The girl. He's going...
Saloon. Here.
Take this.
Right.
See to him. I'll go to the women.
The door. God, no.
Keep coming, Harvey. You've left the door open enough. My pistol is aimed straight.
Murphy.
That voice.
It is I, Pelham.
Pelham? My God, am I pleased to see you.
You're safe.
The broken door.
We thought.
We were afraid they'd return.
But what's been happening?
Two of them. Carpenter and another. Bars the door down.
Miss Collins, are you all right?
Mr. Murphy was wonderful.
Wonderful.
He waited until they actually started to come in for us. Then he fired the pistol.
And missed.
Missed?
By a mile. But it was enough. They were still getting over the surprise when we heard your shot on deck. That finished it. They turned and ran.
We were so worried. We heard shouting.
It's all over. Once Laszlo was down...
The shot.
I had no choice. Then Mason said, but that can wait. Just as long as you're all safe. Where's Mrs. Tully?
In there. Mercifully, she knew nothing of it at all.
She slipped into unconsciousness before it started. But she'll be all right. I looked at her a few moments ago. It's purely weakness.
We must get her to our cabin.
We could hear Crispin.
They got to him, but he was not hurt badly. Booth will take over. There'll be no more trouble. And if Booth is right, we should very soon be home and dry.
The sea has much to answer for.
The sea can be beautiful, like today. But it can also be somber, dangerous, and deceptive. Even so, it cannot be held entirely responsible for the frailties of human nature.
It has an uncanny way of bringing those who traverse it closely together in comradeship.
Oh?
Captain Crispin said that. That first night on board. All those weeks and months ago.
And he was right. But also, or so it seems to me, it has an equally uncanny way of bringing out the best and the worst in people.
Over 5 long months. It does not seem feasible. How those months must have changed us all.
Perhaps.
Now it does not seem possible that we really are at last at journey's end.
Shortly we should sight the Adelaide lightship.
Is that true?
When we shall anchor and go ashore.
Go ashore. Oh, what wonderful words.
Are they?
Are they? But surely you could not possibly wish...
I said that this voyage had been catastrophic. And so it has. Tragic and sad. Yet, amidst it all, I personally have found something I am so afraid of losing once we sight that ship and go ashore. Selfishly, I want to postpone the moment.
And what is that, sir?
Something very precious. Something I knew existed, but have never experienced. Call it a reason. A reason for being, for living, for everything that has gone before.
But why should you lose it? Surely with something as precious as this, you should make every effort to retain it.
I would. But I am too inadequate. I have only a hard, difficult soldier's life to offer in exchange.
Would it be harder, more difficult than we have experienced on this ship over the past 5 months?
It could be more uncertain.
Could anything?
Miss Collins, I am not sure if you intend to give me hope, but in these past weeks, our friendship has come to mean so very much to me. Far more than I can put into words. Except that the thought of not being with you renders any future empty and meaningless. Oh, but I express myself badly.
Not for my understanding. For they are feelings I recognize.
Within yourself? Miss Collins, Caroline, when you are settled with your uncle and fully recovered from this harrowing experience, would you consider it favorably were I to visit you and talk with your uncle?
They tell me that Victoria and the country north of Adelaide are far apart.
What are miles?
Then I shall be very happy and waiting.
Caroline, my dear, I would do my utmost to prove I could make you happy.
You already have, sir. I must go and tell Mrs. Tully. She has been waiting for such news.
Waiting?
We both have.
Sail! Oh!
Sail? There.
Sail off starboard!
There she is.
The lightship?
The continent of Australia. Landfall.
At last. Home. It has ended.
No. Rather is it just beginning.
Somewhere Lies Land, by Philip Barker. The cast was as follows. Caroline Collins, Patricia Gallimore. Captain Crispin, Stephen Murray. Pelham, Noel Johnson. Mrs. Tully, Kathleen Helm. Mr. Murphy, Brian Haynes. Alice Murphy, Valerie Kirkbright. Wade, John Bentley. Mr. Booth, Rolf Lefevre. Mason, John Pullen. Laszlo, Alexander John. Jackson, Peter Williams. Carpenter, John Brining. The play was produced by Norman Wright.